From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions. I just turned Louisiana there. A little Cajun. Yeah, talking everything. Big Ten football. If you're new to the show, sort of the bit we do to start things is David does his intro in some weird voice that I have to mimic. No idea whatever it's going to be. How'd I do on that one, Dave?
That was good. I think you actually leaned into it further than I did.
Yeah.
I was doing a bad, I don't even think it was a Randy Savage impression. I think it was just a Randy Savage homage.
Yes.
Because I didn't hit the like high points as well. But then you went even further, I think, professional wrestler. But I think it was just generic Cajun professional wrestler. I really liked it.
It was, yeah, it morphed into Cajun professional wrestler. I don't know.
I used to love
Randy Macho Man Savage. It was great stuff. But yeah, we're the Podcast of Champions, and what we do is talk Big Ten football sometimes. Crazy day. Just got back from Michigan yesterday, so we're going to talk about that. Obviously, huge game. Michigan running all over USC, 27-24. We're going to get into that. We had an awesome Friday night game in the Big Ten. We're going to get to with Illinois' undefeated Illini.
Did you just put an S at the end of Illinois?
Illinois.
I think you did.
I did. Wow. Do that sometimes. I try to do that.
I like that.
Yeah. So we got a fun show for you today. We'll try to get into everything. 12 games in the Big Ten. Now we'll get into conference play a little bit more going forward. But
yeah, yours was a Coach O homage. Somebody put that in the chat. That's what I was.
Oh,
that's
maybe,
what you were doing. You were doing an Ed O.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
We are.
There was the Revenge of Ed O game too. Don't forget about that.
The Revenge of Ed O.
Yeah. LSU got its revenge on UCLA for dethroning their man.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Good point. All right. Well, if you have questions or comments, if you are watching us live on our YouTube channel, I can put your comments up on the screen, put your questions in there too. But you can also email us, big10cast@gmail.com. Call or text us at 424-532-0678. I think we got a text message today. No voicemails. You can also tweet at us, B1G Podcast. And if you have the Apple Podcasting app, we'd love to get a 5-star rating from you and some kind of funny review. I don't know if we got any new ones, David.
No, we got no new ones. Our listenership has fallen off drastically. I think there are 4 people who just listen to the show on repeat, and they have exhausted their email addresses available to them to continue to leave reviews.
What?
It's a sad situation.
I have some. That's going to change. I have some good news on that front.
Please.
Our man John and Brea. Let me pull up his text message.
Oh, are we bribing people again?
We are going to be bribing people.
Hell yeah, John and Brea.
So here's the thing. He is going to be sending me 18 $17 gift cards for POC listeners. What he said was, he goes, I'm going to make the gift card amount equal to how many points UCLA scores against LSU. Thanks the Bruins for getting 17 points on the road there. So he said the minimum would be $8, but they're getting $17 gift cards. So we're going to, he's going to send me 18 of them for the 18 people who write 5-star reviews or whatever. He says, it's not Blue Chew, but it's all I got. So, he was actually flying back from Europe.
Here's the deal, everyone. Yeah. We did this a few years ago with Jockey underwear gift cards. Not just underwear. Let's make that clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Jockey, lots of
stuff. Still have lots of Jockey stuff. I love
The best 5-star review every week, we will send you a $17 Trader Joe's gift card.
Mm.
That's what we will do.
Yes.
Starting next week?
Yeah.
He'll send them. He's good for it, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. He'll definitely send them over.
All right. Starting next week. So get your reviews in. I would say to have it read on air on the Monday show, the review needs to be in probably by Saturday with the way Apple Podcasts works. It usually is like a delay of a day or two before the review posts.
Yeah. So do that, and we'll read them. We're doing 2 shows a week. we'll take our best one, and you will get a Trader Joe's gift card. So if you like Trader Joe's, how could you not? They're my sponsor over at the Peristyle Podcast, and John's great. So thanks, John, for doing that. Also want to thank our other sponsor, MyBookie. So make sure you go over there. The website, if you want to go, it's mybookie.website/podcastofchampions if you want to get a little bit more information. But the promo code is POC. So if you want to put your initial deposit in there, use the promo code POC and they will match it 100%, which is great. Put in like $200, you have $400 to play with. If you're betting with us, the first 3 weeks you'd been done pretty well. This last week you would have not done well.
No.
So Dave and I were both under 500, a bad week picking games. And I talked to, I mean, a bunch of people that I listened to, they all had, it was kind of a weird week. Even in the NFL, a bunch of upsets, a lot of weird stuff that's happening, but certainly on the college level and the Big Ten level, people not covering spreads, people not playing up to expectations, people playing better than expectations. There was a lot of weird stuff going on. But
we knew going into the weekend we were going to do horribly. And the reason was we agreed far too much.
We agreed a lot.
Whenever we're in agreement, it means it's like crossing the streams. It's we're going to be horrifically wrong when we agree too much. There's never going to be a situation where we agree totally and we get every pick right. That can't happen.
No.
That won't happen. It's much, much more likely that we will get nearly everything wrong, which is what happened this week.
Luckily, I switched one of my picks, the Penn State pick, and they got a late cover. So I went 5-7. Overall, I'm 28-21. So that's good, but not a good week. Dave was 4-8, not so good. 25-24 overall. So just a smidge over 500, but after this week, probably not. But you can follow our picks. You can go against our picks. I know there was someone in the email went against our picks or one of David's picks and made some money. But go in there, MyBookie. They've been awesome to us. POC is the promo code, or use Pac-12. That's our old one. Works too, but they'll 100% match of your initial deposit. And a lot of fun. You can get action on all the different games. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only over at MyBookie.
I think this trophy is more in focus than I am. I think that's what I'm saying.
So I need to change that?
No. I love it.
No, I will. That was happening too.
Yeah.
Maybe we should move the trophy and I'll try. Maybe it'll focus. Maybe it's finding the. I'll do that when you go on a rant. I'll tweak your.
Focus get it hyper focused.
I'm trying.
See my eyeball explode.
We need to see that. Yeah. Real quick, we got to do the survivor pool. Mm-hmm. Down to 21 survivors. I know there were some people that were. So he wants to let us know, Matthew. We're gonna dock his pay for this. But he said, can you mention again for people not to submit picks if they are no longer in the pool or never entered? There were a few of those this past week. And can you also mention that the link to the results is in the submission form? One of the surviving players couldn't figure out where to find it. So. Yes, we start with 252 entries, 23 entered week 4, 21 survived. The people that did not, they picked Illinois to win, and they did not. So at least everyone entered their picks. But yeah, we still got 21 left.
Beautiful.
We might save a couple of the gift cards for, maybe we'll do that.
Maybe. That's a good idea.
That's good. Yeah. So get your reviews in quick because we're going to have to save some for the survivor pool rankings. But good stuff. So I think we got to do our...
Big Ten Roundup.
That is a little too long, but...
It's a little long.
Yeah, but that's okay.
But it was made for free.
It was made... We got
and
it.
With love.
With love and free. Okay, we're going to do, if you're new, we're going to go through our Big Ten power rankings in reverse order and talk about the teams that were involved in all of the games. So we're going to start, and I got a show to do after. We're going to try to go through these a little quicker maybe than normal, but we'll get through them all. We'll get all your favorite teams in there. First up, we got to talk about...
UCLA Bruins.
Wow!
Number 18 in our power rankings.
Taking on the LSU Tigers. Nice. That was like I was going for a Cajun Tiger. Did that work?
Pretty good.
Did it go over well?
Yeah.
Okay,
cool.
So my sense of UCLA this year, I feel like I already know this team completely. And so they're going to remain probably in last until they like win a good game decisively. But as a, I'm using them as a perfect mirror. You know, like you will see your own flaws in UCLA. The only thing I took away from this game is that LSU's defense is hot shit, like dog shit, like it's bad. UCLA was able to score 17 points in a single half of this football game. The main indication there being LSU can't cover. Ethan Garbers was hitting little leak outs to the running backs. He was, just kind of able to throw the ball around the field. And it was 17-17 at halftime, which, again, I took as a reflection. This is how bad LSU is. Now, eventually, LSU was able to pull ahead because UCLA is quite bad, and they won 34-17. But my big takeaway from this game is, how did USC only score 27 points on this team? That's my big takeaway. I'm not sure how much more there is to take from it for UCLA. They've got a couple of guys. Kwazi Gilmer showed up in this game. He's a freshman. He had a couple of big catches. Jalen Berger looked good in the second half running the ball. Offensive line is a mess. They allowed a ton of pressure on Ethan Garbers, who then also made some pretty big mistakes. He threw an interception. He had a fumble on a strip sack. And then he also had a fumble that drove them way out of field goal range when they were driving in the second half. And that one wasn't lost, but it was a 25-yard loss. So he was really bad. And then defensively, UCLA once again could not get off the field on third down. They couldn't cover Mason Taylor, the tight end for LSU. And Garrett Nussmeier did basically the same thing Curtis Rourke did to him last week. So it wasn't a good performance for UCLA. I think what they were able to do in the first half was mostly a reflection of LSU being really bad on defense.
Yeah, they haven't looked great. They lost Harold Perkins for the year now. So we'll see how LSU does sort of going forward. But I was impressed the way Garber sort of, they were moving the ball pretty well. It felt like you put a lot of chips into it and you're trying to make something happen in the first half and we're keeping things close, but it was just going to be like a war of attrition. It was going to be hard to.
You know who scored more points against LSU than UCLA did?
Who?
Nichols.
Yeah, like they've struggled. LSU's not been good. Like they're going to get into
UCLA the scored the fewest points this year against that LSU defense.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not a good performance. They scored a little bit in the first half, but it's not a good performance by any stretch of the imagination. They were still under 300 yards total in the game.
LSU had a crappy defense like USC did. I don't think they fixed it as well.
No, they haven't fixed it. It's a bad, bad defense. The only thing they can do is rush the passer. Their cornerback play is poor. Their secondary play is poor. They've got some talented linebackers, but their defensive tackle play isn't good. So all of that combines for a bad defense, and UCLA was able to take advantage of it in one half, but not in the other half.
Yeah.
Basically because they started playing a little bit more zone.
Well, we got this one wrong. We took LSU. They won by three scores, but we needed a few more points. And the fact that it was tied at halftime was not going to be good there. So we did get that incorrect. Our number 17 team, we have... Oops. Mm.
Purdue Boilermakers.
And who did they lose to, Ryan?
They lost to
Oregon State Beavers.
That's just me being a production expert.
Yes.
Knowing what drops to drop. Kind of Purdue, as we expected, got its butt kicked again in this week. This was 24-7 after three quarters, and then there was like a flurry of scoring late. The big thing was Purdue was able to run the ball, and I think that was a worry for Oregon State after the game, and I think it was a positive you can take away from it for Purdue. I mean, they finished with 30 carries for 263 yards against this Oregon State team. Now, part of that was they were still running the ball very late in this game because, even down a bunch of points, they were still running it, which probably served to make it so they couldn't win the game, but did make it so that they could, put up some numbers. But Oregon State ended up winning 38-21. It was the late night game, in as much as there is a late night game in the Big Ten era. I think it kicked off at 5. Is that right? 5:30.
I was in Detroit time, so it was like,
yeah, you were staying up late. Yeah. So, but anyway, Purdue looks pretty bad. We expected them to be probably bottom rung of the Big Ten, and it looks like they'll be one rung up from the bottom because UCLA, again, is not moving from that spot until they win convincingly against a decent team. But they don't look very good. And I wonder if they're going to look very good if they can get this thing together.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to. You look at that. Oregon State held the ball for over 40 minutes in this one. Crazy. Ran a whole bunch more, 75 plays to 47. You know, Purdue passed for 56 yards, 7 completions. We saw another team with 7 completions that they only got 32 yards. But
did they win or lose that team?
That team won.
Oh, interesting. I guess we'll learn more about that soon.
Yeah, one of several games where there was under 100 yards passing. It's like, welcome to the freaking Big Ten.
But, yeah, baby.
Yeah, there was a bunch of that. Okay, next up, we've got number 16.
Northwestern Wildcats.
They were visiting number 13.
Washington Huskies.
This is such a Big Ten ass score. Like, such a Big Ten ass score.
When there was a 2 next to Northwestern. Like,
yeah,
Northwestern's
when
name.
This was 17-2 at halftime.
That was freaking awesome.
Finished 24-5, Washington over Northwestern. I think, you know, this is one where I wish I had gone with more of my preseason sense. You know how you're always kind of like warring between, you know, what do I do with the data that I have versus what I thought of them preseason? And this is one where just my general gut instinct that Northwestern was bad, like very bad, should have ruled the day here.
It's tough because they, you know, you get the Big Ten Coach of the Year last year, you win 8 games, and it's like, no, that was an anomaly last year.
But like, have they had even a halfway decent offensive performance this year? I mean,
I don't think so.
Eastern Illinois, like that was like, I think 7-7 or 14-7 at halftime. They just don't look right at all. You know, we thought they'd maybe found an answer at quarterback, but Jack Lausch was 8 of 27 for 53 yards and 2 interceptions. You can only do that sort of thing when you're Michigan. You can't throw for 53 yards and try to win a game against Washington.
Yeah.
He accounted personally for 74 of their 112 total offensive yards. So it wasn't like it was a whole lot better on the ground.
No.
Washington,
53 passing yards, 59 rushing yards.
Well, this is the thing, is I don't know how much to take from this if I'm Washington. Like, how much do you take from terrible. Dominating them with your defense in this game? Offensively, I think there's more to take from it. I thought Will Rogers played really well, and I thought Jonah Coleman looked good against what has been a reasonably decent Northwestern defense. But I don't know. This just felt like a goodish team, or at least a above average talented team, versus a completely overmatched. Northwestern looks like a G5 to me.
They're bad. It was a intentional grounding in the end zone safety. Like, that's how they got their first 2 points. It's like 5 runs in a 9-inning game. That's pretty good. Like, 5 points in a 4-quarter football game.
What's that average out to? I'm not a math guy.
It's like 1.25
points. 1.25, baby.
Like, what in the actual heck was going on there? Not good. Yeah. So Northwestern, the purple battle went to Washington. And
what was the 2 points? It was an intentional grounding in the end zone, right?
Yes. I just said that.
Yeah. That was fun.
I guess you were paying attention to what I was saying.
I was paying attention.
Yeah. All right.
Don't worry about it.
Let's go to number 15. That would hurt your eyes watching the game, actually. Number 15.
Wisconsin Badgers.
They were on a bye.
They sure were.
So we have another Big Ten clash. This was the NBC game. We have number 14.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
And hosting number 8.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Um, second half, Iowa had an offense, and that's a scary, 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 scary thing.
I mean, running offense. But
yeah, running. Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, McNamara hit a couple of throws in the second half, too. I mean, he did not hit throws over the course of the game, but in the second half, he did hit a couple.
We got this one very wrong.
Very wrong. Iowa won 31-14. Caleb Johnson's a monster.
Minnesota was winning 14-7. It was like, oh, we got
this. Yeah, run. But then Iowa shut the water off on him.
Yeah.
Like, just, nope, you're not scoring anymore. And their cornerbacks were suddenly playing like, oh, yeah, sorry, you're not going to get any separation. Like, not even the tiniest little bit. Their cornerback play in the second half was really astounding.
Yeah, I don't think it was great in the first half, but
they were able to hit some of the stuff that some of those explosives that teams have been able to do against Iowa this year. But in the second half, it just was not there. Caleb Johnson, though, for Iowa, he's a really good running back.
Yes,
really, really, really good, because teams are loading up against him because obviously that passing attack is nothing, and he's still able to generate just chunk yardage. He had 21 carries for 206 yards, and it felt like almost all of that was in the second half. Like, it felt like, oh, yeah, I know, he just took over the game. He had 3 touchdowns. Look, we've made a lot of jokes about Iowa's offense, and I think some of them are still valid. Obviously, his passing attack is not very good, but they're a lot better than they were last year offensively. And there were some good calls in this game. Like, there were some really nifty, like, run design from Tim Lester, what's his name?
Lester.
There was just, it didn't look like this is just pure dirt ball. Like, it was some good stuff. Minnesota, on the other hand, like, they couldn't do anything in the second half. Brosmer, he was trying his best. One of his touchdown throws, but like, even his touchdown throw, like, I think the second one, it was completely covered. It's just the receiver made a good play in the end zone, but like, good on him for knowing, okay, I've just got to throw it when it's single coverage. But the whole time I was watching the game, I was like, he's got a really tough task today, because he's not getting any separation. And when he does, it is like such a tiny window and a window of time, not just like where he has to place it, but how and when. That was just, I don't know. I think I'm getting sucked into Big Ten football now, because I'm like, wow, Iowa's defense, they're really good. But Iowa's defense, they're really good. And so, I mean, obviously hugely disappointing for Minnesota to not be able to score in the second half and to allow that much to Iowa, even knowing they're just going to run the ball and still not being able to stop it. I think Minnesota, the thing to do with them is to kind of look ahead right now. They've got a tough road now. They got to go at Michigan next week. Then they have to go. Then they take USC at home, and then it's at UCLA, which, you know, that's an opportunity for a win. But like, what I would be worried about for both of those teams is what's Minnesota's mentality heading into that one, and what's UCLA's? Like, which team is closer to quitting? Because I think it's very likely Minnesota is 2-4 at that point, and it's overwhelmingly likely that UCLA is 1-4.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a, which of these teams still has a pulse? Which of these teams still wants to win? Because this was a must win for Minnesota in kind of building a bowl season out of this team. And they just couldn't get the job done.
So we're really in the first half of covering these Big Ten games. This is now the third example of a team that failed to throw for 100 yards. The first two lost. This is a team that won. 62 passing yards for Iowa and 11 completions and won the game. Just seeing them run the ball, Johnson with over 200 yards. I mean, he's a legit back, could be the best one in the Big Ten, or he's up there. He's definitely in the conversation. But impressive win for Iowa. It looked like Minnesota had figured some stuff out and then just got completely shut down in the second half. And like you said, Minnesota, they're in a tough spot right now. So we'll see what they can do. Hey, David, we got a super chat from JBK, Big Ten Ohio State fan here. Welcome, guys. I stumbled upon the show During the Pac-12 fall, you two make a great pair. Love the dry humor, though I'm not into princesses. I'll leave a review on Apple.
We really haven't. We're never going to dodge the allegations, but we have not talked about Disney princesses on this show in quite a while.
It was a while. It was really one of those off-season days. And
it was like 5 or 6 years ago where we were likening each program or each coach to a Disney princess.
Yes, but you had to do most of that.
Oh, I did it all. And that was peak. My children then were 5 and 2, so it was peak, like, oh, I know them all. I know it all.
Yeah.
I know everything.
You did.
I don't think I know everything anymore, but I might.
You're not into that. Mark says, 62 passing yards and a win. Can't get lower than that and be successful, right? Stay tuned. I think he knows. Okay, so we had 13 was Washington. We already talked about number 12.
Maryland Terrapin.
That's a good one.
It's so good. Against the Villanova Wildcats. Again, this was a sneaky FCS game. You might think, oh, Villanova, they're a, you know, they're a major college basketball power. Surely that's an FBS school. No. Big Ten still sneaking in FCS games here in week 4. That's right. Mm. You should write your congressman about it.
We got the Minnesota game wrong, by the way.
Yeah,
we took 2.5 points.
I think you already said that, but
okay.
Yeah, you can say it again. Say it again.
Wrong.
You want to say it again?
We were wrong.
Yeah, we sure were.
They were ferocious.
This is one where I think Maryland was just up so big at halftime that it was like, yeah, why are we playing this game? Yeah, it was 24-0. They finished 38-20. They still barely covered.
I know. We
got this by half a point. I wouldn't take too much from it beyond that. I mean, yes, there was a pseudo collapse in the second half and they allowed it to get far too close, but this was never in any danger of being a game. And
it was in danger of not covering.
It was in danger of not covering,
which would make me very upset.
But it was a dominant first half performance, and I think that's the big takeaway, is that I think Maryland, like, what we're seeing with them is just kind of, they're comfortably a middle team. Like, you know, they're gonna lose some games where you're like, oh man, they should have won that, and then they're, you know, gonna reasonably take care of business when it's time to take care of business. I think they're just, you know, probably a bowl team. Maybe not a whole lot better than that.
Yeah. They did turn the ball over a couple times, and that's probably why. I mean, Maryland had like almost 500 yards total to, I think, Villanova had like 230 or something like that. But they turned it over a couple times. Yeah, I think you got the win. You covered barely, but that was a little scary there for a bit.
Actually, so let's put together their bowl map, because I think it actually is getting a little interesting now. So at Indiana, now that's a – that feels, well, we'll talk about that this week. Northwestern at home feels like a win. USC at home, probably a loss. At Minnesota, that probably needs to be a win. Then it's at Oregon, nope. And then Rutgers and Iowa, both at home. I think they need to, so they need to beat Northwestern, beat Minnesota, and then probably take one of Rutgers and Iowa at home.
Yeah.
To get to a bowl.
It's going to be tough.
That's not easy.
No. All right, we got number 11. They had a rough one.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Man, there was so much good in this game for them. And then, you know, obviously very disappointing to lose. I don't know how to, like, really grasp Michigan State's season at this point, because
we got this wrong.
We got this wrong.
But it was close.
Mostly because Jonathan Smith has them weirdly ahead of schedule, because Aiden Chile still isn't playing well.
No.
Like, there's still, like, so much that's wrong with what they're trying to do, but they were still up.
He makes great plays and then horrific plays.
I mean, they were up 13-6, and, you know, they were, I mean, at one point in this game, it felt like, oh, they're going to get control of this game, and then it all just kind of went away in, like, 3 minutes, where suddenly it was like, oh, no, this is a game again, and just too many turnovers for Aiden Chiles. He had, I think he finished with 3 interceptions.
Yeah, 3 interceptions and 1 fumble loss. I don't know if he lost the fumble, but there was Michigan State a fumble loss too. I forget which one that was, but 3 picks.
Yeah, and I mean, they had the lead late. They were up 19-16 with about 4 minutes to go, but then allowed Michigan State, or then allowed Boston College to drive down the field and score with, you know, just over a minute to go. And then Aiden Chiles finished things off with another pick at the end.
that was like, yeah, apropos.
I mean, he's having to do a whole lot. Like, he was nearly the leading rusher in this game. He had 9 carries for 57 yards and a touchdown. But he's just not throwing the ball well enough. Defense is keeping him in it. I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it. Disappointing. I think you could fairly argue Michigan State should be 4-0 right now, which is a crazy thing. And this is the other side of it. That's a crazy thing to think from where we were preseason.
Yeah, where we thought our expectations would not win a game or something. Yeah.
So I think if you're a Michigan State fan, you're like, oh, this is pretty good. It just could be better. But I think, you know, from a general standpoint, it's, you know, Michigan State's ahead of schedule. And this is a well-coached Boston College team. I mean, Bill O'Brien is doing a nice job there. Yeah. So it's not, this isn't a bad one to lose on the road. But still, I think if you're, you know, this is again all about building a bowl picture at this point for Michigan State. And now it's, again, a tough road from here. I mean, I think there's a Purdue win on the schedule. But other than that, it's Ohio State at home this week. Yeah. Best of luck at Oregon. Iowa at home, maybe. You can talk me into it. But that's just, you know, Iowa bias. At Michigan, that's tough. Indiana at home, tough. At Illinois, tough. And then it's Purdue and Rutgers at home.
Yeah.
So, again, this is probably, you know, in as much as anything, is this is a must win.
It is. And it was tough. That Michigan State, you could say, outplayed Boston College. BC was favored by 6.5. We took BC. They won by 4. Looked like they could cover at the end, but Michigan State had that drive at the end. Mm-hmm. Was like it started on their own 2. It was like a 9-minute drive. It was like their longest drive of the season. 16 plays, I think it was. And then, boom, they end up having to kick the field goal. And so we would need BC to like kick a field goal. They went down, they scored a touchdown, and then Aiden Childs had a chance and threw a pick. But yeah, this kind of went the way we thought a little bit. But I think Michigan State played better than I thought they would. But it's still that it's just like this coin flip with Childs. Like, you're not sure.
And I do want to, like, in fairness to Childs, they were down 4 of their top 6 receivers, in this game. And so some of that could have been miscommunication, just not, you know, being on the same page with guys. But still, I mean, he's turning it over way too much. He's been doing it all year now.
Yeah, that's kind of his thing. So, but you could see that Jonathan Smith is a good coach. You watch this and like, all right, like, they're not there yet, but they are like getting close. Okay, this was a big one. This was the Friday night game. We have our number 10 team.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
And now our number 5 team.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
So good. All right, so Illinois won on the road at Nebraska 31-24, and it went to overtime. It was, I think this was the fair and just result to this game, because I thought Illinois outplayed Nebraska pretty much thoroughly and completely on both sides of the ball. I thought this was much more of a Illinois like dominating performance than even really the score suggests, or I mean, honestly, the stats. When you look at Luke Altmaier's stat line of 21 of 27 for 215 yards, just leave out the 4 touchdowns right now, you're like, oh, pedestrian. If you watch this game, I don't think they struggled for a single one of their completed passes. Like, I think it was wide open, wide open, wide open, schemed open, schemed open, schemed open. Like, just, and it was a lot of short and intermediate stuff. He wasn't going deep a whole lot, but he was just managing this perfectly.
Yeah.
And it was just coming so easily for Illinois' offense throughout the entire game. And really, I mean, they should have scored more. Like, some of it's just like kind of the tempo and they're not going super fast, but they were really, really good. And on the other side, Nebraska, look, Dylan Raiola is really good. But the stuff was just harder. Like, he was having to throw contested catches. He was having to throw it. Like, his one interception was a contested. He had to throw it into, like, basically single coverage in the end zone. And the DB made a great play. But it was just a lot harder. And it wasn't really him. It wasn't really a problem he was having. It was just versus that Illinois defense.
It's a really good defense.
They were having a lot more issues. I thought Nebraska's defense didn't play very well. I didn't think it was schemed very well. I didn't think they covered very well. And that's my guy, Tony White. I just didn't think they did a good job. I thought they had a lot of struggles in this game. And then in overtime, I thought the fair result resulted, you know. And yes, we would have preferred Nebraska win by 8, because we both picked Nebraska minus 7.5, but Illinois was the far better team in this game.
Yeah, we knew this was the Friday night game. I just landed and was at our little meetup in Ypsilanti in Michigan outside of Ann Arbor. And it was a fun game to watch. I mean, Illinois ended up having the stats were pretty close, but Illinois had two fumbles, and I think that's why I think Illinois would have just won outright without the
they turned it over a couple of times.
The one Raiola pick there, but Altmaier 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. He was really efficient. They moved the ball. I thought he just moved the ball really well on Nebraska the whole time, and it just was really hard for them to kind of get any separation. So. You know, Nebraska missed that field goal, and then Luke Altmaier had that 2-minute drill, and that was the thing of beauty. So, yeah, this was just one of those, you're like, man, I thought Nebraska was set up to go like 7-0 and then, you know, see what happens from there. But this is I think they're still going to make a bowl, probably not going to get the 10 wins like I thought they were going to get to, but this was one I thought they were going to win and did not. But
yeah,
Illinois doing a really good job.
Road ahead for Nebraska. It's nice to check in on this 4 games in. They got to go at Purdue. It's probably a win. Rutgers at home, interesting game. At Indiana, at Ohio State, they'll probably be dogs in both of those. UCLA at home, that's a win. at USC, probably a loss. Wisconsin at home, that's probably a win. At Iowa, that'll be an interesting game. So, I mean, I think there's 3 definite wins on there and probably 2 or 3 that can go either way. But I think you're probably looking more at like 7-5, 8-4 now.
Yeah. All right. Okay. This was a big one. And by the way, I didn't do the power rankings. This is David. So if you're going to get mad at him. We got number 9.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
And number 3,
USC Trojans.
Look, did I throw these together in a few minutes before the show? Yes. But I don't feel like, I mean, should Michigan be a lot higher? They threw the ball for 32 yards in this game.
Yes.
I mean, is beating up on USC's offensive line, is that really a hallmark of a great team? Okay. Michigan won 27-24. Let's get that out of the way.
Yes.
Now tell me this. Does USC's offensive line exist?
In theory, yes.
But like in practice, like where are we? Like on the invention of the atomic bomb, where are we still? Like if that is USC having a good offensive line, are we still in like, you know, European scientists figuring out that like quantum theory is a thing? Like where are we on this?
Yeah, they haven't. Los Alamitos hasn't been built up yet, so no.
Los Alamitos has probably also not been built.
That's true.
How many times has Miller Moss sacked in this one? Is it 5, 4?
I don't know what the sacks were,
but hit just constantly.
The pressure was
constantly like, under pressure.
The PFF, if you follow that at all, they graded out USC's offensive line pass protection as the lowest ever in history. That they've ever graded. It was like 8. And like the lowest before that was like 30.
All right. So coming into the game, last week on the show, we talked about how Danton Lynn has been very good against one-dimensional offenses.
Yeah.
And even I didn't expect Michigan to be as one-dimensional as they were in this game. They threw the ball 12 times, ran it 46 times, only 32 pass yards. So I would have thought, seeing that, oh, certainly they will have shut down that running attack. Ryan, did they shut down the running attack for Michigan?
No.
In fact, Michigan averaged over 6 yards per carry on those 46 carries for almost 300 yards.
290
for 290 yards. Yeah. And how many yards did USC have at halftime total?
It wasn't a lot.
I want to say it was like 8. Which one of those was your favorite offensive yard from the first half?
There were some stunners in there. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It was 14-3?
Yes, it was 14-3. All right, so credit to Miller Moss, really, for hanging in there and coming back. USC had a chance to just put this game away late, didn't do it on the final drive, and then Michigan drove down the field for the final score to win the game. So I think if you want to, you can take some positives away for USC. You can say they're tougher. They have some more physicality, But the problem is, I think the line play is still a grim disaster. I think on both sides of the ball, defensive line not being able to stop that rushing attack when you know it's coming, it's the only thing they can do, still can't stop the run. And then offensive line, they're going to be teeing off on Miller Moss all game. You got to pass protect, can't do it. Some of that's on Lincoln Riley. You got to bring more blockers in. You got to try different things. You got to have more quick hitters. You got to do just a wide variety of different things. And he didn't do enough of that, especially in the first half. But yeah, I didn't love this is my theory on Lincoln Riley, is that he's not a real game plan coach. And this is another game where it just felt like,
yeah,
they didn't have a game plan to win this game until the second half. Like, until the second half, it felt like, oh, they just thought they could go out there and just run their crap. And it's like, Michigan has a very good defense. You got to know what you're up against. And it just, I didn't see that.
No, the play calling was a little suspect. He called it out himself that he could have done a better job. We had a comment in the chat. Why didn't SC run the ball with 4 minutes left? Yeah, at that point, so USC, I mean, they couldn't play much worse than what they were doing in the first half. Moss couldn't, no time. They couldn't run the ball. The defense actually played well. Michigan had three explosive runs, and I think that's the shocker, and especially the last one. Outside of that, Michigan wasn't moving the ball. It wasn't like they were getting 12-yard runs. Everything was like maybe 3 or 4 yard runs, but then they'd get the big one, you know, and that's two big touchdown runs and then a 63-yarder in the final minutes of the game. That was the killer one that set Michigan up there. It was bizarre. Two former Bruins missed that tackle on the last one, yeah. Humphries and Kamari Ramsey. But it's hard to say USC defense played poorly. If you look at Michigan in the second half, three and out, three and out, three and out, fumble, three and out. The late in the fourth quarter, the very first down they got was the 63-yard run. So it was like, they didn't make a lot of mistakes, but every mistake wasn't like shooting yourself in the foot. It was blowing your leg off. And that's what ended up happening. And the fact that Michigan had the ball with 4 minutes left and needed to score a touchdown, and they were not going to throw a forward pass, they needed an explosive run. And somehow USC gave that up. But I'm curious to see what Michigan can do like this going forward. I know it was only 1 week and maybe there's going to be more passing, but this is the 13th game, I believe, that Alex Orji has played in, and you know, by far the most passes he's thrown, but still,
it was
32
an orgy
yards passing.
Of running.
It was, and he didn't even run that well. He didn't do that much in the ground game. It was just handing the ball off. Mullings was great. He's better. He's the best back there. But I think for USC fans, you felt like you could have had this game. Certainly, if this was played like 10 times, I don't think it was going to go down this way most of the time, but whatever. I know a lot of people were complaining about the officiating, 46 runs, no holding calls, all that stuff. Whatever. USC got pushed around the first half, somehow bounced back and was able to take control and be in position to win the game, and then still lost it. I'm a little worried about Michigan going forward. Like, if you can't have any passing game whatsoever, I think there's a lot of teams that, you know, and now that you've seen it, I think you're going to be able to defend it a little bit better.
Which of these teams can they beat doing what they just did? Minnesota?
Yes.
Yes. Washington on the road?
I don't know. Maybe.
At Illinois?
They haven't left Michigan.
Like, I'm going to say at Illinois, no.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that against Illinois.
Michigan State, yes.
Probably.
At home. Oregon at home, hell no.
No.
At Indiana, no.
No.
Versus Northwestern, yes. At Ohio State, no. So, yeah. I mean, I think you could be looking at 7-5 here. 6-6
potentially
maybe, in a disaster zone. I think they need to throw the ball better than they did.
Yeah. It was bad. Like, it was unbelievably how
but
bad.
Okay. Here's where I want to start though. Not start. Here's where I want to finish. USC, let's just go through this really quick, because there's a lot of talk in the offseason about the defense, but okay. Utah State, we're just gonna throw that out because Utah State's ass. Okay.
Well,
they scored 27 points against LSU.
Yeah.
And they scored 24 points against Michigan. And this is a good but not great Michigan defense, and that was a bad LSU defense. So,
yeah.
Flaws in that Lincoln Riley offense. And I don't think they're Miller Moss related. I think it's mostly that offensive line.
I think the offensive line is bad. They actually shifted things around in the second half, and they benched Elijah Page, left tackle, bring in Tobias Raymond to right tackle, move Mason Murphy over, and they actually got a lot more protection. They were able to move the ball. And Miller Moss ends up throwing a pick six to Will Johnson, one of the best corners in the country. And they still were able to come back and still take the lead and still have the ball back. It was crazy how – I don't know how USC came back from all that. But there's concerns for sure. Like, the offensive line was not good. You're not going to face two first-round draft picks on the defensive line the rest of the way, but still it's concerning the lack of protection they had in the first half.
All right, well, let's look at USC. So they get Wisconsin at home. That's a win. At Minnesota, probably a win. Penn State at home?
That's flippy.
I think it's a loss. At Maryland, that's a win.
Yeah.
Rutgers at home.
That, unfortunately for Rutgers, that's like 11 p.m. local time for them on a Friday night.
That is true. Like, at Washington, Nebraska at home, at UCLA, and then Notre Dame at home. I mean, still major potential for a very, very good season.
Yeah.
I think they've got to figure some stuff out. I don't think Penn State's going to be nice to them if their offensive line is as dookie as it was against Michigan.
No, I agree. They still have a lot set up there, but this was a way winnable game, and they know they let one get away. But I think they're if you watch this team, if this was last year's team against the Michigan team, Michigan would have ran for 500 yards.
Yep.
So, but giving up those three explosive runs was really the killer for them. Okay, let's go to number 7. Where are they?
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knights.
Rutgers went into the hostile confines at Virginia Tech and won 26-23. They were dominating this game, and it could have been, I think, edging on blowout territory. And then Rutgers, I want to say they had the ball. It was like inside the 5, I want to say, when they were up. What was it?
23-7.
23-7. They miss a field goal when they had it down to... No, that was at the Virginia Tech 6. What am I thinking of? Well, anyway, they had it. They were driving up 23-7, couldn't put it away, and then Virginia Tech kind of scored a flurry of points at the end of this game to make it far, far, far closer than it should have been. But Virginia Tech was favored in this game.
Yeah, we got this one right, finally. Yeah.
I thought my big takeaway from watching it, and this is as a hater of Big Ten quarterbacks, especially two-time Big Ten quarterbacks, Ethan Calikmanis played a really good game.
Almost 11 yards per attempt for him.
He managed it well. He made no mistakes. He threw the ball accurately and well. And if you couple that with Kyle Manungai, you got the makings of a little decent offense there. Now, obviously, they can't, you know, give up 16 points in a quarter like they did at the end of this game. But I think they were feeling, you know, hey, we've won this game. It's in the bag. And then kind of let their foot off the gas a little bit.
It was 16-3 in the fourth quarter. You're like, what? Wait, what are you doing here?
Yeah. But otherwise, really nice win for Rutgers. They've started the year off really, really well.
Yeah. I think they almost doubled. It was almost 40 minutes of time of possession in this one. It was a little disappointing to see the sort of let your foot off the gas at the end. But a good win. You know, we have seen a lot of home teams, you know, Big Ten home games to get a Power 4 win on the road. I like this one for, you know, Virginia Tech has got their issues and stuff, but good win for Rutgers. And, you know, we thought they were going to be better this year. They're looking better. So kudos to what they're able to do.
All right, let's add these up. Washington at home, win.
Yeah, I think they'll win.
At Nebraska, interesting game. That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Wisconsin at home, that's a win. UCLA at home, that's a win. So we're talking about, that's 6-1 at worst, Rutgers, through the first seven games of the year.
Yeah.
At USC, probably a loss. Minnesota
at
home.
They got shot, yeah.
Minnesota at home, that's a win. So now we're talking about 7-2. At Maryland, 8-2.
Yeah.
Illinois at home, that feels like a very decisive game. Could go either way, and then at Michigan State, the potential for 10-2 Rutgers is not is totally there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, it's a function of that schedule. Let's remember
we talk about it. Like, the schedule makers were Rutgers fans. I think we do that. All right, number 6,
Indiana Hoosiers.
Good folks. I'm from Indiana.
They beat the hell out of the Charlotte 49ers. Oh, me. No, that's Irish. That's me pot of gold. I'm going to go in those hills and I'm going to get some gold. There we go.
28 and a half point favorite, and we both took Indiana and they covered.
Yeah, they covered by 30. They covered that by 10. Yeah, Kurt Cignetti's a killer. Charlotte did score more points in this game than UCLA. They scored more points in the first half than UCLA did in a full game last week. So that's something to clean up, Kurt. but Indiana murdered them. They're going to keep covering until the odds makers catch up with them. But I think they're already a very good team and they're taking care of business because people say, oh, when you've got a bad schedule, you can't really take anything away from it. And sometimes that's true, but when you are murdering your bad schedule, you can take things away from that. When you are dominant in the way that good teams are dominant against bad teams, you can take something away from it. And right now, FIU was the closest game they've played, and that was 31-7. They have not allowed more than 14 points in a football game this year. They've not scored fewer than 31. And in the last three, they have not scored fewer than 42. And then if you look at their schedule going forward, Maryland, that's a win. At Northwestern, that's a win. Nebraska at home, that's a win. Washington at home, that's a win. Michigan State on the road,
probably a win.
That's a win. Then they're going to head into Michigan, Ohio State, and Purdue. But there's a very good chance it's 9-0 Indiana heading into those three games.
Holy crap.
10-2 Indiana's on the table. And I don't know if the same Michigan team and the same Indiana team show up on the field on, you know, that Saturday in November. 11-1 Indiana is potentially possible.
Damn. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. No. Don't talk about it too much.
They score in
bunches. It'll scare you.
They do score in bunches. It's just like all of a sudden you're like, oh, they're kind of.
They've got a damn good quarterback.
Yeah.
Their defense is obviously legit and well coached. And their schedule is manageable.
Yeah. And you got Kirk Cignetti.
Yeah.
I mean, his old team put 70
yeah.
on North Carolina. Pretty impressive. And that's with a bunch of the guys he brought with him. So, yeah, love this Indiana team. They're just going to be so much fun. They're just fun to watch. And this was a 3-win team last year, and now they're like, they could be double digits.
Well, they're obviously a bowl team, and they might be a contender in the Big Ten this year.
I mean, how crazy is that? Awesome.
Playoff
stuff.
Indiana. Get it trending.
Nice. All right. I'm
a longtime Hoosiers fan. You know that?
Are you?
Yeah, I go way back. I'm a huge Indiana guy. Where are they located? Bloomington? Yeah. Big Bloomington guy. I've been there a bunch.
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number five we talked about. Number four we got.
Oregon Ducks.
They're on a bye.
Yep.
Number three we talked about USC. We got number two, the last game we need to discuss.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
That's not the last game.
I thought it was.
Number one.
Oh, did they? I thought they had a bye.
No. I mean, basically, but no, they didn't. Anyway, Penn State.
Oh, my bad.
Late cover. I have nothing else to say about this. Kent State is an abomination of a football team. They are 0-4. They have lost to Pitt by almost 30, to something called St. Francis by 6, to Tennessee 71-0, and Penn State 56-0. They have been outscored 127-0 in their last two games. They don't make G5s like this on the West Coast, so we're not familiar with them. But Kent State is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Penn State, congratulations to you on covering.
Speaking of under 100 passing yards, they had 18, two completions, 2 of 13.
Like, what is it? Throwing the ball. Kind of serious critique. The schedules for like every single Big Ten team have been so bad. Like the non-conference slate for so many of these teams, like Ohio State, we're going to talk about them in a second. Like they've not played anybody. Like it's just bad, bad, bad. Penn State, been a lot of bad, except for West Virginia. But like you're not getting any information from these games.
No.
You're not getting anything of value. And it's, you know, the SEC, they dropped this game in like early November. Like they'll drop their FCS thing. Do something like that. Like you don't want to like whet your appetite on a season with just, oh, another week of just absolute ass football games.
Yeah. The spread of this one was 49, and I was getting a little worried, but it was like 42, and Penn State was driving. Like, all right, cool. Score the first touchdown of the fourth quarter. Now it's tied. I'm like, all right, well, at least we'll get a push on this one. And then they put, I think it was in the last 3 minutes or something, they put the 56 burger on Kent State. So, woo, I got this one right, and David got it wrong. So, love that. All right, and our number one team we have...
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
So, all right, Ohio State won, didn't cover, 49-14. I think if you're squinting, you can see some problems for Ohio State defensively, like if you're really looking for something out of these games. But again, because the competition is so bad, you don't know if what you're seeing is real or if it's just, we don't really care because it's Marshall and we're going to beat them. But Marshall at times is able to move the ball in the first half. And in theory, that's when Ohio State would be most engaged with the game. So again, how much to take from that? Probably not much. Ohio State looks pretty dominant. Offensively, they had no issues running the ball. It was ridiculous. Their top two guys both averaged over 12 yards per carry. Over 12 yards per carry.
Yeah.
The only knock is that they probably should have been running it even more.
No, yeah.
But they had 20 carries for those two guys had 20 carries for almost 250 yards and four touchdowns. Gonna win games doing that. But yeah, I mean, I think you could maybe see some problems with Ohio State's defense, but we're not gonna know until they play real teams, which should start this week.
Yeah, this was a 40-point spread. Ohio State didn't cover, partially because they didn't force any turnovers in this game, and they threw one interception. And Marshall held the ball for over 36 minutes in this game. So I think that's the kind of stuff where they weren't gonna win, but they could keep it closer by doing that. And Ohio State, you know, you get a couple turnovers and they're going to cover that spread easily. And it was 7-0 Marshall to start the game. Did you see the very first touchdown for Yes. Ohio State?
Yes.
Your boy, Chip Kelly, the wing T formation.
And I was trying to tell people, you know, in the offseason, no, he's actually going to pull that out in games. It's not some homage. He's going to do that.
He did it.
And then he did it.
Yeah.
That's right, baby.
The wing T. Good stuff.
I hate him so much.
All right, well, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We got to do our Pac-12 power rankings and quickly get through questions because I got another show to do. So we'll get through this back in a minute, everyone. All righty, we're back here on the podcast of champions. We got to do our mythical Pac-12 power rankings. We'll go through this quick. Got number 12.
UCLA Bruins.
Ass.
Yeah, they were bad. They lost. We had number 11.
Arizona Wildcats.
They run a bye.
How did they get there? They don't look good, though.
No, they don't.
I think you should have moved this team up, right? Number 10.
Oregon State Beavers.
We had them 11?
They were 11. Now I
guess 10. They only beat Purdue. Yeah. This was a crazy one. Number 9.
Colorado Buffaloes.
If you're allowing two completed Hail Marys, more or less, to finish a game, you probably need to be fired.
Dave Aranda's going to be fired.
Yeah.
Like, literally drop the Hail Mary and then throw another Hail Mary and completed it.
You should be fired.
That was insane. This team got a big win. Number 8.
Stanford Cardinal.
That's right, baby. Friday night, Stanford going into the hostile confines of Syracuse, New York for a 26-24 victory.
Yeah, it was the Carrier Dome. I forget what it is now. Carrier bought that thing in perpetuity.
Yeah.
So that was crazy. Number 7.
Washington Huskies.
They gave up 5 points. Number 6.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Lost on the road at Texas Tech. No harm in that. They still moved the ball pretty well, and I thought actually looked kind of like the better team for a lot of this game.
Yeah. That was a little disappointing, but, you know, they look like they're
They're a lot better than they were.
Yeah, I would agree. Number five.
California Golden Bears.
Post-game win expectancy had this as a Cal win. It's very lucky that Florida State won it. They had a lot of drives. They just ended with too many field goals.
Yeah, the Cal Twitter undefeated, but Cal no longer undefeated, unfortunately. Okay, number four.
Washington State Cougars.
They played an absolutely insane game on Friday night.
Double OT?
Yes. Went into overtime. They won 54-52. John Mateer giveth, John Mateer taketh away. He had four touchdowns, but also two interceptions. But yeah, crazy, crazy, crazy game against San Jose State. But Washington State pulls out the win, and their drive for the playoff continues.
Yes. That was, they had the double CW double header.
That's right.
Very cool. Number three.
Oregon Ducks.
We talked about that. Number two.
USC Trojans.
And number one, we're going to miss like the Kyle Whittingham non-injury reports.
Utah Utes.
Are we really, though? Are we
no,
really?
Not at all.
Yeah. Utah went into Stillwater. And kind of did a little something similar to Rutgers, where they just shut down Oklahoma State for almost this entire game and then made it close at the end. But Utah's defense was lights out. Even without Cam Rising on offense, they still went in and won on the road, which was not always easy when they were in the Pac-12. The Pac-12 trained them, and now they're going to go into the Big 12, and they're going to dominate on the road.
Yeah.
That's what Utah
that was
did.
That was a big win there without Cam Rising. I don't know if there's going to be some repercussions because now you actually have to have injury reports and stuff. And Whittingham's just going to do his thing. And I was so tired of like week in and week out, is Cam Rising going to play? Is Cam Rising going to play? After speaking at Media Day and never playing the entire season. That
made you so upset.
I was very, very upset with that. Okay.
You can dishonor a game. You can dishonor, you know, the local media. But when you dishonor Media Day.
Yeah, man.
That is something that just sticks in Ryan Abraham's craw.
Yeah.
That's his favorite event of the year. And aside from spring games.
Yeah.
So, man.
We have Mark says Cam Rising playing needs to have its own Vegas line. Yeah, 100%. Like, that's good.
Yeah.
There were reports coming out, people got mad, all this kind of stuff. So, yes, and the two quarterbacks for that, the starting quarterbacks for that game were supposed to be of higher age than the two quarterbacks starting for the Bears versus Colts in the NFL by like 5 years.
If Cam Rising had started.
But yeah, he did not. They had a 19-year-old start.
So he didn't play because
some young pup that was 19.
Kyle Whittingham kept that information from you personally.
He did. Pissed me off. All right, let's get some questions. We have a text from Oxnard Steve. Kudos to Alex and the gang for producing such great sound drops for the Big Ten schools. Well done. And on the roundup, it sounded like someone from Illinois had just about had enough of someone or something from Iowa screeching at the top of their lungs and put it out of its misery and ours with a rather emphatic arrow. A special shout out to Shane and Mrs. Shane for putting together their versions a couple weeks ago. I'm still laughing at, hi, I'm from Illinois, and Scarlet Knights. Ha, ha, ha. To everyone, keep sending Ryan and David more, quote, work to do. I'm sure they'll appreciate it. Oxnard Steve, and I'm definitely not from Illinois.
Thank you, Oxnard Steve. This is from Andrew, Andy. You guys didn't read my last email, so I attached it to this one in case you change your minds and get bored enough to read it. I think we did read this email.
Yeah, I thought we did.
Yeah, anyway, his new question is, now that you've seen a few games played, name a team not named Oregon, USC, Ohio State, or Penn State from the Big Ten that could win the conference or make the playoffs. We already did this, baby.
Indiana.
Your Indiana Hoosiers. Go look at that schedule and tell me I'm wrong. Tell me. I want to be wrong. Because it scares me. Challenge. Name the capital and largest city in every Big Ten state. Ooh, this is fun. All right. Washington, Olympia, and Seattle. Seattle,
yeah.
Oregon.
Portland?
I think it's Portland, right?
Yeah.
Wait, is it?
I think it.
Am I confusing myself here?
Maybe.
Okay, we're going Portland. California, it's Sacramento and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Nebraska is it Lincoln and Omaha? Yeah. Iowa is Iowa City and Des Moines?
Probably Des Moines the biggest, I think.
You don't think Iowa City's bigger? You think it's just Des Moines, Des Moines?
Wait,
is Iowa City the capital or is Des Moines the capital?
I thought Iowa City was the capital. Maybe
Oh,
not.
No.
no. Iowa City and Des Moines in some order. Illinois. We got Chicago. Chicago.
No, is it? Is it,
Champaign is not the
not
capital.
Champaign. What am I?
Springfield.
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 Is that it? Right. Okay.
Yeah. Indiana is Indianapolis.
For both?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Let's go Indianapolis for both.
I think Minneapolis for both for Minnesota.
Minnesota is Minneapolis for both. Feels right. Minneapolis, St. Paul. Wisconsin. Is it Madison? And then Milwaukee? Is it both? Or is it just Milwaukee?
I don't remember.
Help us out here, man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I haven't done these in so
Which
long.
One do we want? Do we want to commit to Milwaukee for both? Or
yeah,
do we
sure.
Want, okay, Milwaukee both.
Yeah.
Michigan.
He said we're wrong on Iowa or something. Salem, Oregon is the one.
Salem, Oregon.
Yeah,
see, I knew. I knew.
Yeah.
I didn't know, but
no,
I knew.
I said it wasn't Portland, but I said the wrong one, yes.
What were we on? Michigan?
Yeah, Detroit.
And Detroit.
And we're wrong on Minnesota, too.
What are we wrong on Minnesota? What's Minnesota?
Don't say wrong. Say what the answer is, because we don't give a shit if you say it's
all right,
wrong.
Ohio. Columbus?
No, they're not the...
They're not the capital?
Maybe Columbus is the capital. Yeah. And then the biggest one is
Cleveland?
Probably Cleveland.
Okay. Yeah. Pennsylvania. That's Harrisburg.
Harrisburg. And then I think Philly is the biggest.
Okay. Maryland.
Baltimore is the biggest.
Oh, is it? Is it Annapolis? No, it's not Annapolis. What is Maryland? What's the capital of Maryland?
Annapolis is where like Navy is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What is the capital of Maryland?
Hey, Tony, stop saying wrong. Say what the answer is, dumbass. Don't give a shit.
St. Paul is the capital and Minneapolis is the biggest. No,
you say wrong one more time, I'm
going to
ban you from
the
chat.
No, no. St. Paul and Minneapolis are the same city. Screw that.
No, they're twin cities. Yeah.
Yeah. Screw that. All right. But where are we at on Maryland?
Oh.
What do we think the capital is? Baltimore. Screw it. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then what's our last one? New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Are we going Trenton? We're going Trenton?
Is that I think that's the capital, right?
Yeah. And then the biggest city would be Newark?
Yeah, I think Newark is the biggest.
Boy, howdy. All right.
Tony says Minneapolis state is the biggest and St. Paul is the capital. I mean, they're like literally right next to each other. Who cares? Yeah.
All right, so we got Salem wrong.
Columbus is the biggest and the capital.
All right, I'm going to say we're right on Minnesota. I think you all just are being too specific. Screw that. We're wrong on Wisconsin. What's that?
I don't know. They didn't say. If they don't say what the answer is, we're
Tony,
we're
you're
close.
Not helping.
Yeah, not helping. All right, let's move on.
All right, I got Annapolis right. That's what RJ Focused is saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Annapolis is...
I knew this all once. I will tell you that. It was all there. It was all here. It's gone now. You want to know why it's gone now? I can remember all sorts of stuff. I can remember all sorts of historical facts. You know why this is gone now? Because nobody needs to know.
Yeah.
My brain is a perfect filter. Okay? And it filters out all unnecessary information.
And all this stuff is now unnecessary.
Yeah, that's right. Milwaukee and Madison. Didn't we say that originally? We just committed to the wrong thing.
I think so, yeah.
Come on, Tony.
Jeez,
Tony. Don't be a pedant.
Yeah. We got DC Dog wrote in. This looks long. This is for you, David. Why doesn't David open a head trauma insurance hotline to prevent pianos from falling on coaches' heads, coaches' heads? He'd have a lot of business in the fall. Just watch Northwestern coach kick a field goal on fourth and goal from about the 3-yard line when his team was down 15 points late in the third quarter with an offense that doesn't offense. Is the goal to win the game? This isn't a team that can drive down that to that area at will. The coach should have called David to ask about his decision to kick there. Very cute, very true.
Very true.
Yeah. Two thoughts on some of the quarterback stat lines from a few of these Big Ten quarterbacks this week. I'm guessing this might seem normal for seasoned Big Ten folks, but it's a little jarring for those of us used to watching the Pac-12. So Iowa's McNamara, we've talked about these already, 11 of 19, 62 yards, 3.3 yards per catch. Michigan's Orgy, 7 of 12, 32 yards, 2.7 yards per catch. No touchdowns, no picks. Northwestern, 8 of 27 for 53 yards. At least he was trying. 2 yards per catch average, 2 picks. And then Purdue, Hudson Card was a 5-11 for 55 yards, 5 yards per catch. He had a touchdown, the only touchdown of that group, but one pick as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that was through three quarters. I'm sorry. So that was when he wrote that in. But yeah,
these teams were 2-2.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the difference. If those numbers had popped up in the Pac-12, those teams would be 0-4 and like four blowouts.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Croissant Barbu. USC's curse on UCLA. Hey guys, Bruin fan from Paris, France here.
Oh.
Probably the only one, I guess. You'd be surprised the hoops that I have to go through to watch the games from here. International. We love this. Knowing how you love bits, I'd love it if you could read the rest of this during the podcast with your most obnoxious French accent. I don't have a good French accent, but I'm going to do it. But okay. I'm going to do it. I'd like to share a theory of mine and have your opinion on it. That's not really French. It's sort that's of like, what is that?
That's more like a French, like, human I'm doing, trafficker.
I'm doing like, hey, go home. As the season advances, I'm more and more convinced that USC deliberately
lost. That's too Russian. That's
I don't know what I'm doing.
That's very Russian.
I can't do it. Lost to UCLA last year in order to save Chip Kelly's job and put us in our current situation. Think about it for a second. After last year's horrendous loss against ASU, Chip was 100% supposed to be gone. We were supposed to get stomped by USC, but we managed to miraculously upset them, send the number one pick to the NFL with a loss, and save Chip's job. Then we have a good performance at the Bowl, and Chip's job became so secure that he had to go himself to a lower job in the same conference after openly shopping himself to every single available job in order for us to get rid of him. Here's some USC's genius 4D chess play. By losing to us, they made sure that Jarmond would keep Chip. Therefore, we wouldn't get a shot at Jonathan Smith, Tony White, Jed Fish, or any of the proper coaches that became available. We would not think of promoting Danton Lynn. This would allow them to poach him and our best defenders. This would force us to hire our inexperienced running backs coach in a hurry, which would then set us back for at least our first season in the Big Ten and potentially even more. At this point, I'm convinced that Jarmond is not incompetent. He's just being bribed by USC. On a more serious note, this game single-handedly changed the trajectory of UCLA's football program. You guys said it many times on the podcast, our situation would be different if we managed to fire Chip early. I'm convinced that with a loss to USC, without even having to wait for the following loss to Cal, Jarmond would have been backed into the corner and would have had no other choice but to fire him, and that things would be different today. What do you think? Keep up the mediocre work. P.S. I'm a filthy Android user, so no Apple Podcast review for me. Also, unless you go live on YouTube at like 3 a.m. Pacific time, no super chat from me either. Any other way to help the show? Wow. Very sweet.
Just writing in from France is great.
This was a great email. Yes, if UCLA lost to USC, I think the trajectory of the program would be far different and far better, which is why sometimes it's judicious to, you know, not root so hard for a win. Just saying.
Yeah, it's been a lot of those. Like, just in my time, just, you know, being on the West Coast and stuff, I think I told you, like, my former boss at Hughes Aircraft Company was a Bruin, and he would write, you know, 4 more years after UCLA won 4 years in a row and 8 years. Like, it seems like UCLA puts a lot into that game. And, like, during that stretch, like, USC won Rose Bowls, you know?
Yeah.
But it was more important for UCLA to beat USC. You know, I think that's because it's a basketball school thing, you know? It's just like you get your wins where you can. But that big win, Carl Durrell extended his time. 13-9, right?
That was a different deal. So 13-9 was very, very, very cool because it was also beating what was a very good USC team.
Yes.
Like very, very good. So that's an upset that's actually meaningful and fun.
So last year's upset was not.
No. Was it even an upset? Like who was favored in that game?
I don't know.
And if it was by like a point. Like it was not a... It was two mediocre teams playing each other. And one of the mediocre teams won because one has to. With present college football rules. But no, 2006 was cool. Like it was, oh, that's awesome. You know, and even like what Chip did in whatever year where they won like 60 something to whatever, that was cool because it's putting up 60. No, this one was stupid.
Yeah.
And all it did was extend Chip Kelly's time past his true sell by date.
Yeah. But I mean, do you really want Jonathan Smith, you know? Would you want to keep Danton Lynn? Did you really want those things?
I'm gonna jump across this desk.
And
I'm gonna strangle.
We gotta move on. Our buddy John Embrea, who's providing the Trader Joe's gift cards.
Yeah, but do you know what I just said? Right.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah. I mean, for a basketball school, pretty good. Favorite moment from John
Messman. What's USC now, a beach volleyball school?
I think so. Four-time national champion. And then you go to a conference and nobody plays that, so yeah, I don't know if it matters.
How does it feel to be a football school that loses to your rival that previous week lost to a tight end and a running back playing quarterback?
I know, it's nuts. Well, yeah, UCLA doesn't play Michigan this year, right?
No.
No, okay. They get Ohio State?
No.
No
Penn
Michigan?
State. Penn State.
Penn State and Oregon. Okay.
Penn State and Oregon. Should be easy. Next 2 weeks.
Yeah. And they don't travel much, right? Like, they didn't go Hawaii and LSU.
It's a very simple schedule. Yeah. Really easy to navigate.
They have to go all the way like Rutgers. They don't do that.
No, right? No. Definitely. Oh, yes. Actually, absolutely they do.
So they go to Hawaii. They go to New Jersey. They went to Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, Red Stick.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right.
I had a better French accent right there.
That was much better than your...
Dude, said, what was going on there? I can't do a French accent.
Someone said Borat in the chat.
I can do a lot of accents, but I can't do a French one.
Yeah.
I got to work on that.
Okay. While killing time before USC versus Michigan, I flipped on the Marshall versus Ohio State game. My timing was perfect. Ohio State scored on a pass play to wide open Jeremiah Smith, a pass even Alex Orji could have completed. And the telecast cut to the obligatory shot of Chip Kelly behind the glass up in the coach's box. And talk of what a brilliant offensive mind he possesses, along with a graphic of his career. The announcers went on to say, quote, "We asked Chip, why would someone leave a head coaching job at a Power 5 school to become an offensive coordinator?" And Chip said, quote, "Because I just want to coach ball," essentially admitting that he was stealing from the UCLA athletic department for several years. But that wasn't my favorite moment. My favorite moment was when the broadcasters followed up that tidbit with speculation that Chip Kelly's name has been mentioned for the head coaching job at Florida. I love college football, John and Brad.
I have no special affection for the Florida football program whatsoever, but I don't wish Chip Kelly on anyone as their head coach.
Because Florida was in on Chip Kelly when UCLA hired him.
But you can't. No.
No, at this point.
Don't do that.
No, you don't want to do that. Will Jed Fish go?
I don't even think he would do it after a year.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Paul Webfoot. Wazoo and the playoffs. Y'all have mentioned a couple of times that Wazoo is a team to watch for the G5 playoff spot, but I think you are mistaken. Unless I'm getting something wrong, he's actually right. I don't think the Pac-12 champion is eligible to take one of the top five conference champion auto bids until they have at least 8 teams. So realistically, Wazoo would probably have to be top 10 in the playoff rankings and grab an at-large bid. Possibly rank 11 or 12 could work depending on how the conference champs end up being ranked. That would be quite the task, but hey, it's a fun idea.
Yeah, it has to be.
I think undefeated Wazoo with a win over Washington.
They're in.
And Texas Tech. I think they get in.
No, they're definitely in.
I think they'd be top 12.
Yes. I mean, if they're undefeated, they have to be top 12. Like, they're going to move up there for sure. The thing will be like 11-1, it would probably be close.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll see how this all sort of plays out. A lot of these teams that you're, you know, like Missouri was a top 10 or is a top 10 team, and they like, go to overtime to beat Vanderbilt. Like there's some of these teams that are like if it's a 10-2 Missouri, like would you rather have them over a 11-1? Yeah, there's gonna be some of those questions at the end of the season. And I think unfortunately some of those other schools aren't gonna, the preferential treatment's gonna go to the 10-2 Missouri type team that doesn't look that good, but they're 10-2 in the SEC, so they'll get in. Is this me?
Yes, it's you.
Thanks, David, and Oregon Musings. Hey Ryan. Or hey, guys. Why did I say hey, Ryan? I don't know. First off, I want to say thanks to David for funding my Vegas weekend. Twitter user at DavidDavidWoods tweeted Friday at 7:10 p.m., quote, "Brett Bielema doesn't like to win football games, apparently. Weird. At which point, I put a sizable sum on the Illinois money line, plus 300, because David being wrong on Twitter is a mortal lock. Big ups to DDW for my sweet hotel room, two-night concert, and Brazilian steakhouse excursion." Very cool. In other news, UCLA returns home this week after a sellout Tiger Stadium, clearly doing an empty chair shaped T-shirt giveaway, witnessed a bewildering Bruin loss in the Bayou. Luckily, UCLA should be well rested after electing to take the second half off, wary of putting too much game tape up for Lan Danning. Despite Oregon's excellent quarterback play, a shame that UCLA never recruited Gabriel. I expected the Bruin defenses will fare well against an offense that failed to score a single solitary point this past week. Meanwhile, the porous Oregon run defense will face standout back Carter Shaw, who's currently averaging 9 yards per carry. Since we all know how punting is winning, superstar Brody Richter's ability to pin opponents deep in their own territory has UCLA well on its way to another win. Keep it really wrong on Twitter, David. Crispy Bruin.
You can count on me for that.
And he showed his money line. He bet $250 plus $300. Payout was $1,000.
Gotta love it.
Good for Crispy Bruin.
I love it. All right. What's next? We've got
West Texas Mike.
West Texas Mike. It's a sound.
Yeah, it was like the Michigan fight song, I believe.
Got it. All right.
So he said he heard it on repeat.
All right. Well, that's it. We don't have anything else.
That was it. Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Whew, good stuff. Yeah. So we'll be back on Thursday doing our picks for, and let me look real quick because I thought we had a lot more conference games for week 4, but for week 5 should be fewer, right? What do we got? Why is it taking so long to load? Yeah, we got a Friday game, Washington Rutgers, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
All right, 7. So I got a hater in the chat. Annoyed. David is the literal only sports reporter who thinks Michigan has a good, not great defense. I mean, I get it. You hate USC, but holy cow, dude. If I am, it's only because people don't know how to look at stats. They're currently the 25th defense if you remove preseason weights, which I think EPA per play does. So yeah, that's good, not great. They're good. They're not great.
Yeah.
So there you go.
They gave up a lot to Texas, but Texas is like really, really good. You almost have to throw that one out. Yeah, so next week we only have, looks like 8 games. That's going
to
be amazing.
We get to preview a normal number of Instead football of games.
17 or whatever we've been doing. Yeah, so good stuff. We will be back on Thursday doing that. There is a Friday game, Washington at Rutgers. That's a tough travel. Mm-hmm. Rutgers has Washington, UCLA, USC. They probably don't play Oregon.
No.
But they play the three, you know.
Yeah, they don't play anybody in the top four, remember?
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up for David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Should we do a screenshot pose? What do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Like jazz hands? Wrap it up. We will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.